it is important for organizations to be aware that cybersecurity is an important part of their business, and it's a process that is the cost of business nowadays. Is no longer an optional item. It's actually something they need to consider in order for them to be competitive, to provide the services that they need to provide.
You're listening to KBCast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Gagana Windsor, National Cybersecurity Lead Partner, Mid-Market from KPMG. And today we're discussing improving industry collaboration and alignment. So Gagana, thanks so much for joining and welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Carissa. It's such a pleasure and honor to be on your podcast.
I feel so bad because it's been such, you know, I've been meaning to ask you for so long, and then I think we tried to do the interview and then things get busy. I get it. But you're here now, so I'm excited to get into our discussion today.
Likewise, and you know, life gets in the way.
So on that note, I want to start maybe with your view on the industry in general in terms of the collaboration. I mean, whatever comes to mind when you hear that question, tell me everything.
It's an interesting question, isn't it? Because when people talk about cybersecurity, they ultimately do not want other people to know if they have any gaps or vulnerabilities. So naturally, collaboration is something that may scare organizations initially. And I feel that has probably been the issue over the past few years. But I feel that as we mature as a cybersecurity industry, Chris, and you have probably seen it across different parts of the industry which we are in touch with, as we mature, the more we become, you know, aware of the threats that we are facing and that we need to fight with, the more the necessity of collaboration becomes important. And if you look at it from the technology vendor's perspective, they already have collaborative platforms where they share logs, as an example, and where they share, you know, persistent advanced threats and things like that, information, right, like from a threat intelligence perspective. But when it comes down to the rest of the ecosystem, because as you can imagine, in cybersecurity, it's almost like we have a split brain. One part of the brain is very much busy with technology, and the other part of the brain is in charge with governance, risk, and compliance. So we have those technology controls that we need to implement for a company to have an effective cybersecurity posture. You know, the other part of the brain, which is governance, risk, and compliance, in order for us to be able to be effective in how we manage those risks that are coming towards us as organizations. So collaboration naturally will become an important part of how we deal with cybersecurity in the future. And I do envision that, you know, the likes of, you know, NTT and large organizations out there, I'm not going to mention names because I think that's a bit, you know, probably a no-no, but like large organizations out there in the cybersecurity vendors, etc., they do need to at some point come together and see what collaboration looks like so that they can service the parts of the market that are currently underserviced.
Okay, I want to get into a little bit more. You do raise a great point around the vendor side of things. I've been speaking to a lot of people, as you know, and one of the things that people have said is, how do we ensure, like whether it's a vendor tech stack or the vendor collaborating more? And I mean, look, I'm just the voice for people's thoughts, opinions, good or bad. And one of the things that people were saying were, well, you know, sometimes a vendor's a little bit more, some vendors are apprehensive about working together because it's like, well, I don't want to potentially give you more of the market share, or you're then beating me from a customer acquisition point of view. So why do you think there is that apprehension to work together? Because I mean, if you really boil it down to everything, it should be we have a common goal to keep customers safe, people safe, businesses safe, but maybe people lose sight of that vision perhaps.
Yeah, and you are making a great point as well, because it is only normal that, you know, commercial organizations have commercial goals. And so obviously many of the vendors would have that apprehension because they're looking at, can I make my numbers this year? Can I, you know, sell as much as I can? And if that particular other vendor, which might be in competition with me, is selling something that could be in competition with what I'm selling, of course, I'm not going to share information with them, right? This is one part of the coin. What I think is in the way is the way we have been thinking about this whole industry from the ground up, right? Because we're making it about, we have made it so far about the profit, and we have made it about, you know, what is there in for me? But if you look at the bigger picture, we actually are of service of a much wider and much broader purpose that we have as industry. And that purpose is to keep our economies secure, to keep them going, because the threats we are dealing with today are very sophisticated, and they're only bound to become even more sophisticated with the introduction of technologies such as AI and down the track quantum, et cetera. So we have no longer, you know, the luxury of thinking of our organizations as separate from the ecosystem, as separate from what's out there. We don't have that luxury anymore. So I feel that as leaders, we have to kind of push ourselves to think differently and to start at a leadership level, creating different incentives around what collaboration looks like, right? That doesn't mean that I ignore the commercial reality of how I need to be making, you know, impact and money for my own organization and profit. But it means that I'm willing to have that conversation and seeking different avenues of how collaboration can look like in the future. And just to give you an example, we've been working with Cyber as part of their initiative around bringing the industry together and defining what good looks like, what the North Star looks like when it comes down to cyber education as an example, right? And in that cohort, we have people from all kind of, you know, organizations, backgrounds, and also objectives. And that has made me reflect on, you know, like, what is it? How can we bring that type of collaboration to the overall industry? Can we create like different forums? Can we think about bringing forward solutions that are actually in nature collaborative? Because there's not even one organization down here, you know, down under that can say, I do everything. You can't be good at everything when it comes down to cybersecurity. Like one of my quotes is usually around that, you know, IT is like a universe and cybersecurity is a galaxy. It's just so complex. And there's so much complexity to deal with within cybersecurity alone. So you can't possibly be able to provide everything with one vendor, right? And as a consequence, we will have to start exploring that at that leadership level, I feel. That is what's been missing so far.
Yeah, great points. So, okay, you mentioned something before, totally about the commercial reality. Look, I get it. People got to make money. People got to feed families. I understand that. I get that. But then I think maybe people focus too much on that, like almost to the point that they compromise maybe doing right by the customer in order to get the deal, because maybe X solution isn't right for the customer, but they do it anyway because they've got sales targets and quotas. And if they don't hit the target, oh, well, then I don't have a job. And then if we go into recession, then that's more dangerous for my own, you know, personal financial affairs because I've got a mortgage. That's how I sort of see some of the thinking. Now, I'm not, you know, blanketing everyone like this because that's fundamentally flawed. I'm just saying that there are probably pockets of these people that exist, or, you know, companies that are very driven by quotas and this and that. But then as a result of that, we're compromising maybe how we're operating as a unity in the space to protect people at the end of the day. What are your thoughts on that?
It's an interesting, you know, view that you have on that, because that would require, you know, to see salespeople as evil or only driven by their own desire to succeed. And I feel that that's not necessarily the case. I have been myself a sales professional, and I have worked with an enormous amount of sales professionals out there. And although there are pockets of them, like you said, people who are motivated and driven by reward, that kind of motivation is what Dan Pink refers to as the motivation 2.0. I don't know if you're aware of Dan Pink, but he's a great writer who writes about a whole heap of fun stuff. And one of the books I'm currently reading is actually called Drive, and it's written by him. He used to be writing the speeches for the politicians in America many, many years ago before he went into journalism, and then finally ended up being a professional writer. And I recently listened to a podcast actually led by Brené Brown, and he was on the podcast and he was speaking about, you know, what drives people and regret and few other fun things that I am personally interested in. But bottom line, why I'm sharing this with you and the audience is because that motivation 2.0 is gone. That reward, like that carrot versus stick kind of motivation is gone. That belongs to the age of industrial revolution. We have entered, you know, a lot more dynamic age. And this new age requires people to actually be connected and have a purpose when they do their job. So they basically do their job because they're excited about the task. They're excited about what they can accomplish, and they're driven by a purpose to provide, you know, something. And most of the, you know, sales professionals, including myself, when I was a sales professional, were driven by that. We're driven by that higher purpose. Like, I want to serve my client. I know I can solve this problem, right? That's number one. To unpack your question. The second part, which you spoke about, which is the commercial reality, it's not only just about, you know, making sure that you keep your job, but in many instances, when we talk about leaders, we're talking about keeping the job of many, many other people that sit under them. So let's say you have a team of 500 people. What would you do? Like, would you decide not to be commercially aware because you want to collaborate, or would you decide to be commercially aware and collaborate so that you can keep the jobs of your people and make sure that they can feed their families? So it's not always just about the individuals, if that makes sense, right? I think it's a much bigger picture, which we need to be aware of in our industry if we want to be effective with collaboration. And then the last part is, I personally feel that those two things are not mutually exclusive. Like, you can still be aware all of the commercial reality and still be of service and still be thinking about how can I collaborate. And that's indeed where I'm going with this, because I'll give you an example. Let's say there's a vendor out there who can do a great, you know, security incident event management platform, and that's all they do. And then they have branched into other things, but they can't do vulnerability assessment and management, right? So in that case, they can go out and actually partner and collaborate with the vulnerability assessment company. And that's how they actually can build an end-to-end solution, or something that resembles a bit more of an end-to-end solution for the end customer, right? But today, technology vendors do not think that way. They think, okay, I'm just going to do this, and this is what I'm going to do, and that's it. So that's why we need to consider the system integrators in the ecosystem. We need to consider the consultants, which is where I belong, et cetera, in order to be able to create that holistic approach to cybersecurity that involves everything and includes the technology components as much as it includes, you know, the governance, risk and compliance components. And then all of a sudden it becomes a well-oiled machine. And that's probably the utopia I am aiming at. I don't know how long it will take us, but I am personally very keen and committed to see that through over the next few years, at least in Australia, at least in our economy, because, you know, we have that vision for Australia 2030 being one of the, actually being the most resilient cybersecurity country in the world, like cybersecurity resilient country in the world, right? So I feel that that is a good goal to be waking up for, you know, starting your day in the morning.
Yeah, most definitely. And I also think, Igana, as well, like, look, salespeople aren't evil. I just think that, you know, speaking to people or their sentiments towards certain things, and not everyone's going to get it right. And yes, being commercially aware, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's just more so, are you doing the right thing by the customer at the end of the day? Because it may mean, hey, we're actually not the right fit for you, but this other vendor, competitor might be. And much to your point before around X company, they may not do vulnerability assessments, for example, but maybe the vendor beside them does. So why not build a bridge and get them to, you know, integrate into your tech stack? I think that's something that people are wanting to know more of now, because you are right. Like, there's the whole old model of 20 years ago when we just outsource everything to one particular vendor is becoming less and less nowadays. Why? Things are becoming more complex. People have different specializations and different streams, so it makes sense to use multiple vendors and suppliers, etc. So how do you think we go about building this tech stack, for example, that you have that end-to-end well-oiled machine, to your words? How do you think we go about saying, hey, we can't do X, but this vendor can? We can sort of go on this journey in, you know, inverted commas. What would be your advice?
In my experience, and, you know, as I said before, I've had the professional sales experience, I've had an alliance experience, and obviously I'm a practitioner as a cybersecurity practitioner in the industry. And I work with a large amount of clients in the mid-market, because that segment of the market is the one that has been given, you know, naturally less attention and love by vendors, but they are the ones that really need assistance and help, right? So from what I can see and the experience I've gathered in the industry, I can say that the way to go about it is through partnership, right? To say, I'm going to partner with these guys that can complement what I'm already having in place and what I have been already good at providing to my clients. And that way, my clients are going to have a much fuller service, right? And that way, by coordinating, we actually providing the best value for our client, because ultimately, each vendor would want to bring that value for their client. They would want to do that because that would mean that they're going to keep doing business with that client, right? So there's not even one company that I've worked with that wouldn't want their clients to succeed. So that's how important it is to have those partnerships. And yeah, that would be my take on how to go about it, like developing partnerships, developing forums and opportunities to speak and connect with each other, and then be able to provide that value for the end customer.
Yeah, most definitely. And I like to think that people who work in the cybersecurity industry are always thinking about the value that they provide for their end customers. So maybe as we sort of alluded to throughout today's interview, we spoke a little bit about talk of alignment. But then I'm always curious around when push comes to shove, we haven't really seen that alignment. Like, there still seems to be things very fragmented, people doing their things left, right, and we want to sort of consolidate what's going on. Are you sort of seeing that as well with your experience in the market?
100%. There is definitely a trend of fragmentation, and that has gone up from the past 5-6 years for sure. Even from the past 10 years, if I look back, last 10 years have been extremely important for the cybersecurity industry. Like, there's so many new vendors that have showed up. I remember back in 2013, there were probably 200 people in the Australian Information Security Association, you know, conference. And that was the national conference. Now we're looking at 3,000-4,000 people coming together within the same industry. That was never the case before, right? So naturally, there's been a massive fragmentation, lots of different vendors coming up with different ideas to service the market and to help customers, etc. And also a lot of different complexities coming from the emergence of new threats. Like, we're looking at threats such as, you know, ransomware that was back in the days not a big deal. Now we can have ransomware as a service. We're looking at things like insider threats that have become, you know, a major issue for our economy. Indeed, I was looking at some stats yesterday for a client presentation, and Home Affairs was reporting that a company in Australia that has been hacked through the means of a cyber threat, the statistics coming from Home Affairs, and a company that has been hacked by, you know, through the means of an insider threat, or like someone with malicious intent, or someone which credentials have been compromised and then used for malicious purposes, they end up spending in the mid-market about $177,000 a year, like after a post-breach. So that kind of leads me to think that the market is going to become even more fragmented before it becomes a bit more consolidated. But I can already see, Carissa, how the consolidation is going to happen. Like, if you look at the large giant tech firms out there, the Googles and the Microsofts of the world, they're trying to enrich their stacks with a number of different solutions that come together. And maybe they don't do all of the different bits and pieces at the same time well enough yet, but down the track they will mature and they'll become better. And that consolidation is also going to be driven by, you know, mergers and acquisitions and all kind of stuff, but also driven by how quickly the technology is actually evolving in our world. So that's why I feel that that layer of leadership which we have in our industry, and that ability to empower small, medium enterprises, startups in Australia, but also abroad, is going to define how well we will be able to deal with the threats of the future, because those large consolidated platforms are not there yet. And they probably won't be there for another 5 to 10 years, if ever.
Yeah, great observation. And I totally agree. And again, it's not about having all the answers to every single question. It's just having that discussion, hearing your thoughts. What are you seeing with your experience, your background, your tenure in the market then as well? And I think the other thing as you were speaking there, Gagana, what was coming up in my mind was maybe just going back to the tech stack comment for a moment. Maybe people feel like it's a zero-sum game. So, for example, hypothetically, oh, I can't do something, you know, I'm going to give it away to someone else. It's not like the other person wins and you lose. So I don't know whether maybe subconsciously that's going on in people's minds. I mean, I'm a big proponent of, you know, connecting people, and I almost see myself as a Westfield help desk for people overseas. It's like a mall information desk to point people in the right direction, to get them through to the right company, organization, whoever, to get them that outcome. So it'd be great to sort of see people adopt that mentality. But from what I have been hearing, even from end customers, they're like, yeah, but we just don't have the bigger network as like someone like yourself has. So it'd be great to, you know, see this start to change over time and know that it's not a zero-sum game. Like if I help you, it doesn't mean that I lose, so to speak.
I love what you just said, and I totally believe in the same as well. And I think you are a fantastic connector. And to some extent, you know, I feel close to you because that's how I perceive myself as well. Like I love connecting people and dots in general, like in all avenues of life. So it's kind of, it is that thought around, can we play win-win? Can we go win-win? And, you know, if you remember the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, he talks about that very much. It's one of the habits. Think win-win. And I feel that we will have to shift towards that in general, because as we enter more threats and more complexity in the future, unless we do that, we are not going to be effective as a society.
Oh, 100%. And I love that win-win. And that's always the mentality that I've led from. And the other thing then as well, to extend that win-win analogy, would be like the law of reciprocity. I know for a fact that I've helped people in the past, and it could, you know, it may be years later. They're like, hey, like you really helped me. Like I've got this opportunity. I've got this speaking thing. It could be whatever. So I really believe in that theory, and it does work. And I know that sometimes some people don't always think like that, but I know after, you know, running my own thing for coming up to 6 years now, it's definitely worked for me. So I always like to engender that theory and philosophy into people that, you know, you always do the right thing, you help people, they absolutely will help you back. And people I know for a fact now will go out of their way. So I'd love to be able to, even this conversation today, that you're agreeing with the sentiments, you like that yourself. So hopefully it can inspire other people to know that maybe just to shift their thinking in how helping other people doesn't necessarily mean that you lose at the end of the day.
Exactly. No, I'm 100% with you. And that's actually one of the coaching that I provide and mentoring I provide to some of the youngest members and the more junior members in my team. I always ask them, how is that you can provide value to someone before you even ask for them to provide value to you? Because that is one of the most powerful things. Like, and as humans, if you think about it, we do love to belong. We love to connect. And when we allow for contribution as a consequence, we also want to give contribution afterwards, right? So it is very, very important to train the younger generations and start them young to think, how can I actually support you? How can I be of service to you so that you can be then one day, maybe you or maybe someone else will be of service to me, right? I really love that. And I do believe firmly that that is the way forward for us as a humanity in general, not just as an industry.
So just going back to one of your comments before, Gigana, you said more fragmentation before it gets better. So what does better look like from your point of view?
This is very wishful thinking at this stage because I don't have, you know, a crystal ball.
Yes, I know. It's just, you know, I'm going to have a wishful question towards you then.
It's like a hypothetical reality, which I'm envisioning and thinking about when I discuss those topics, right? And the thing that might be good to consider is, again, that consolidation coming through the giant and large organizations. But equally, through collaboration, what I see is that type of consolidation can also come through partnerships. So again, speaking with a lot of startups and locally born organizations with different ability to service the market in Australia from a cybersecurity perspective, bringing them all together in different consortium or in different forums for them to be able to connect and then ultimately provide that end-to-end thinking and services to their clients, that might be a way to go forward. And to be honest with you, I'm seeing more and more organizations being open to that. And I'm seeing also places like Stone and Chalk and a few others promoting this type of thinking where they bring them together to say, you need to partner because by you partnering, you're providing a better outcome together. If you are not partnering, then there is someone else that needs to come in and you know, they might, the outcome might not be the same. So being able to bring those, like connect those dots together. And I feel that that is probably the way forward. And to your point, there are risks and there are blocks and roadblocks that we should be considering when we talk about that, because you got to be real about it, right? Like, it's not going to be a piece of cake or piece or a walk in the park. It will require people to shift their thinking from, I'm caring about my commercial reality and I'm actually taking on to care about the outcome that I'm providing to the client, and how can I give them a better outcome? And, you know, again, going back to the young generation, teaching them to think that way would be actually what I feel is going to make the difference in the future.
Do you think as well, actually, on that point you raised, which was excellent, it's maybe like different generations. So for example, if I look at baby boomers, and I read this book like 12 years ago, it was called Manager 2.0. It was really interesting. It talks about different generations. They're not better or worse. They're just different. But if I go back to even baby boomers, for example, back then it was more about, oh, what's, you know, what's in it for the shareholders? And that's still important. But what I'm seeing now as a shift, or this next wave of leadership, is like, okay, well, how can we care about our environment? How can we care about, you know, giving males, you know, paternity leave for longer, or, you know, females returning to work? So I've definitely seen a shift, even when I started my career 15 years ago, in how leadership is changing their thoughts and they're actually caring. Yes, of course they're caring about the shareholders. That's important, but it's not purely just driven by that. I've just seen that even over the last 15 years or so since I've started working, and how companies, organizations, even large ones that are listed, changing that thinking towards helping the ecosystem, helping our community, helping our competitors, if that's what needs to happen to get that end goal. So I think as we traverse now into the next couple of years, and you know, you and I have this discussion again, we may have more data points and more insights to say, hey, actually we are evolving. And like you said, it's not a piece of cake, it's not a walk in the park, but it is going to take a little bit of time in order for people to start, you know, leading from the front, but also singing from the same hymn book.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm fully in line with what you just said. And, you know, another thing to consider as well is being able to empower the different parts of our society to think that way. I don't know. I was reflecting this morning. I was actually speaking with an amazing Australian-born startup, and they were telling me about the new technology they're putting together and how that's going to change the way people perceive each other at the workplace. And, you know, and it was just so inspiring to listen to them. And it is actually true. There are elements of, you know, the different generations coming up with different ideas and having a different mindset. And at the same time, I feel that the generation before us, like the baby boomers and then the ones in between, are actually the ones that can still bring that wise leadership and anchor that we need to go forward. That doesn't mean that we, as the new generation of leaders and the ones after us, don't take responsibility. Quite the opposite. Like, we have to all be responsible that we are part of this ecosystem. But leadership is actually one of those things I personally am really passionate about. And my coach said to me once, he said, you know, if you have to choose between management and leadership, choose leadership. Choose leadership, because leadership will drive better management outcomes. It will empower people to step up in, you know, wherever they need to be and to achieve their potential so that they can be better managers of whatever is coming their way. So it's the same. Like, I feel like we have to develop a fine listening of the people that we interact with, because the industry is made of people. And if I have, you know, a view that someone is acting as an example out of their own personal interest, and I'm not willing to see if they have other commitment towards a higher purpose, then obviously that person has no chance to show up differently for me. You know, so the way we perceive others is, we have to take basically responsibility for the way we perceive others, I feel, right? And that doesn't mean being oblivious of what's really happening, but also not putting in people's mouths words that they didn't say, or not making them wrong for something that we think should be done differently. But having that ability to open a dialogue and listen people big, like, think of people like they are big people, like they are up to big stuff. And all I can do as a human being in my own experience is empower them to do that big stuff. I think we went on a tangent, but yeah.
But I love a tangent. So then, okay, so just, okay, so you've got a leadership coach, you've obviously a leader yourself. So top three things that you've learned in leadership. I'm really keen to hear your thoughts now that we're on this tangent.
Oh my gosh, top three things. Where do I start? Number one, I feel, is the ability to listen. Like the ability to listen to your people and find out what is important to them. How do they feel about different things? And what is that I need to do to empower them? That's number one. The second one is, when you are leading, you are not always going to please everyone. There's always going to be something that is not going to go your way, or people might not like, and you got to learn to be okay with that. And the third one, maybe I'm a bit uncertain between a couple of things. So the first one is learning to be assertive, not being passive and not being aggressive, but sitting in that ability to be firm, direct, and able to express what needs to happen if you have a vision, so that people can actually learn from you. But also so that you don't sell out on the vision. If you have a great idea, if you have a vision that you want to change the world, or you want to do something good for humanity or for a specific industry or a specific demographic group, don't sell out on it. Like be assertive about it. Go for it. Don't give up.
Ooh, I love that last one though. Don't sell out on the vision. Do you have an example of company or someone? I mean, you don't have to use a tech company or a cyber company, but you have an example? I do exactly know what you're saying though.
Yeah, I do actually have examples. I've been working in the past few months. We've developed a new offering around the startup space in Australia, and I've been working with a whole heap of super inspiring startups. And in the startup world, it's often that, you know, a founder is challenged with investors coming and telling them they need to change this or they need to change that and they need to rebrand or something. And so I've seen a couple of instances where the founders actually said no to investors simply because they were not willing to sell out on their vision. And I really respected and loved that. And I feel that we should be teaching people to do that and do it in a respectful and collaborative manner, but being able also to say no. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. And that's hard, right? Especially when you got to say no to like money because you may need it, especially as a startup. So that takes a lot of guts and a lot of integrity to be able to say that. So I'm a big proponent of that. But just quickly, as I know we're running out of time, I really want to just maybe switch gears and focus on cyber maturity conversations and just your definition or what your thoughts are around that.
Look, that's one of the passions of my current life, I feel, because as I said at the beginning, I work mostly and predominantly with mid-market organizations in Australia. And what that means, that's anywhere between $10 million to $1 billion revenue. So it's a huge market out there, right? And when I look at that up to $1 billion market, very few of them, I would say probably 25% of the organizations in the country actually have, you know, a solid cyber maturity position. And what I mean by that is they might have started some sort of a tactical work around cybersecurity, introduced few technologies. They may have started to, you know, build a policy around how they deal with data or overarching cybersecurity policy. But most of them, I would say 90%, don't really have a strategy about how they're going to go about it. That strategy, if they have one, is not aligned to the business objectives, or it's simply a roadmap to where they're going to go next. And that is a major problem, because if you look at the high profile breaches that we saw in the country, you know, earlier this year and last year, those breaches were mostly due to the fact that there was a governance element that was, you know, overlooked, and it was not respected, or it was not put in place or in practice. So from that perspective, I feel that we need to be thinking about maturing our mid-market and small mid-market organizations, small, medium businesses in Australia, because they are the ones most subject to cyber attacks. The same is valid for the large ones, like the large end of town has matured to some extent. They are already doing, you know, good job in maturing their cyber posture and then their over cyber maturity, right? However, there are still elements which are kind of not yet where they should be. Things around operational technology, things around legacy systems. We still need to be, you know, looking at our operations holistically, at our business holistically from a cyber perspective in order to be able to be effective, because otherwise, I'm seeing a lot of breakdowns. And just to give you some numbers for the audience, last year we saw about 693,000 organizations in Australia being hacked, which costed our economy about $29 billion.
It's wild for Australia, considering we're only 26 million people and we don't have a very large economy.
Exactly. Like if we are losing, and this is like money that are bleeding out of our economy, like imagine how powerful we would be if we were to invest even a fraction of that into cybersecurity maturity.
Well, we got to start doing something. 2030, you know, the most secure country on the planet. We may have to invest that amount of money to get to that level.
I know. And I think things are moving in the right direction with having, you know, the strategy coming out from our current government. Like this is a fantastic opportunity because we have a cyber minister looking after that. So I think the dial is shifting, is just taking time. And it is important for organizations to be aware that cyber maturity is an important part of their business. And it's a process that is the cost of business that nowadays is no longer an optional item. It's actually something they need to consider in order for them to be competitive, to be commercially, you know, competitive and able to provide the services that they need to provide.
So Gagana, is there any final thoughts or closing comments you'd like to leave our audience with today?
I just wanted to say thank you so much, Carissa, for having this amazing platform and giving people like me a voice so that we can actually bring forward some ideas and make a change. I really thank you, and I thank everyone who is listening.
Well, you're welcome. It's people like yourself that give up their time out of their day to share their insights and their thoughts with the audience today. And don't forget, the audience is global as well. So I think that your thoughts and your insights go far and wide. So I genuinely do appreciate it and can't wait to get you back again. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by MERCSEC, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit MERCSEC.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to kbi.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.